I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another edition of Rivals. Rivals has arrived, and now it's time to go. And where are we going today, Jason?
Buddy, we're going to talk about somebody. Man, we crossed over in the NFL and with Dick LeBeau. I mean, Dick LeBeau. I mean, there's an article on ESPN about the legendary tales about Dick LeBeau, the NFL's greatest storyteller. You know, I played for Dick for 4 years. You played with him for 2 years, right?
2 years in Cincinnati. He's been in the NFL for 59 consecutive years as a player and as a coach.
And when I was at the Bengals, we thought he'd been around a long time.
Right.
Right?
and when I was at the Bengals, he'd been around a really long time.
A really long time. Yeah. And, you know, you're just like, holy cow, Dick. And it's funny. Dick is awesome. And I loved playing for Dick LeBeau. I mean, he treated me fantastic. I mean, he was obviously a huge part of me being a first-round draft pick to the Cincinnati Bengals. He went to bat for me and wanted me and always treated me great. And you know what? He still picks up the phone for me today. I call Dick LeBeau and leave a message. And, you know, it honestly might take him 4 weeks, but all of a sudden he calls up and he's like,
but he calls you back.
Yeah. You know, Nate, Jay, you know, you got that. He's got that, still got that Southern, you know, a little bit of drawl to him. And, you know, he just says, hey, sorry, I didn't get back to you sooner. And what can I do? And he's always there to help you and be a great friend. What a truly genuine man Dick LeBeau is.
I think what's shocking about Dick LeBeau for me is he has this such a mild mannered demeanor.
Oh yeah,
he's like Clint Eastwood, right? He's just
I like that.
Just this cool guy, you know. Just but man, you know,
he never really went off screaming and yelling and going.
But
nuts.
The minute things had to happen, you know, here came the 357, and boom, you're done. You know, I mean, he just was extremely cool. But you have all these other personalities, like a guy like Buddy Ryan, who's just kind of very in your face, kind of
so
personality,
intense, right?
Or a Mike Ditka, or some of these coaches, and he was so calm, but he was just this. He was this assassin. You know, he was literally that gunfighter, just as cool as could be.
You know what's awesome is he backed up everything. I mean, he was a Pro Bowl football player himself in the NFL. So he played for – he was one of the great DBs of his time.
Well, he had 62 interceptions.
Yeah.
In an era when they really didn't throw the ball.
Yeah. But ball hawk.
And he was on some really good teams with the Detroit Lions and back in college.
Yes.
College All-American at the Ohio State University. And I mean, absolutely an incredible player.
An incredible player and an incredible football mind, right? And he'd see things, you know, that one. I lived this story, you know, on ESPN when Ike Taylor told his story about Dick LeBeau giving him a heads up on a play. Hey, they're going to come out with something tricky here. I feel it. So I'm going to put you in a soft coverage so you can stay back and just watch for this trick play. And and Ike talks about how he just bit on the play anyways, right? He just went up there, didn't listen to coach. They beat him, get him down the 1 yard line, they score on it, and he comes back to the sideline and LeBeau, you know, I love the quote because I can see LeBeau doing this, right? It's like you're there yourself. He goes, we can't win ball games with you playing like this, and just walked off. And, you know, Ike says, I wanted to cry because he let LeBeau down so bad, you know, and that is so LeBeau. And man, believe me, I listened to LeBeau. We all did. And he would, I remember him giving us those heads up like that in certain play situations in the timeouts and come over and, you know, and talk to us or over on the sideline when we broke down and we came off the field, you know, and he talked to the defense. He was just, he stayed calm. He just gave you those savvy heads ups and it was just a great man to play for.
Well, we were in Cincinnati and he was the defensive coordinator and he, you know, he'd been a long time defensive coordinator, coach, always got passed up to be the guy.
To be the head coach.
To be the head coach. He was always passed up. And we had our head coach, Bruce Coslett, three games into the season. Things were ugly. We'd lost all three games. They're starting a second-year quarterback, Akili Smith, who's really struggling.
Yeah.
A lot of talent. I mean, we had a lot of talent. We had as much talent, I think, when I was in Cincinnati as really any team I played on a lot of good teams, teams that went to the playoffs, good teams. And we're 0-3. And Coslett just leaves. He just quits. He just he doesn't get fired, nothing. He's
what?
Just like he just walks out the door.
I forgot this.
I have had enough.
Coslett just left.
He just left.
See, because he was on the staff when I was at the Bengals too.
Right, no, and he's a great mind. You know?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And, he can really be an abrasive person to people, but I loved playing for him. I really did.
I got along with him fine.
So he leaves, and they put the interim head coaching tag on Coach LeBeau.
Which is, that sucks, right?
Which is the kiss of death.
Kiss of death.
Yeah, it's just like, and it's,
in Cincinnati, and they're things, already losing, it's falling apart.
And things are ugly.
Right. So the one chance he gets to be head coach is in a crappy situation.
It's the worst scenario that you could possibly.
Yeah, I remember him.
Could possibly be in. So, he takes over and they start letting me play. They just say, we're gonna bench the kid, and he's not ready to play. And we start winning. And we're playing, I don't remember who it is, but we get a safety. And the game's really close. And everyone's like freaking out. You know, should we punt it? Should we kick it? What should we do? All of these things. Because we still have a chance to win the football game. And I remember him calling a timeout. And players are, you know, players, coaches, everyone, they're giving their advice.
Yeah.
On what should happen.
Mayhem, right? It's just insane.
And he just he kind of put his foot down. And he goes, I know what I'm doing here. Let me go and do it. And what he was going to do, and I'd, at that time, it was like my 11th year in the NFL. I never knew this until that moment. He was going to onside punt a safety. You ever heard of that?
Onside punt a safety.
So we had to punt. So the Cincinnati Bengals had to punt.
He's going to turn around and kick it out of the back of the end zone.
No, he was going to punt it 10, just like an onside kick. So you know how you line up at the 20-yard line and you have to kick the ball? You can either kick it or punt it to the other team?
Yeah.
And he was going to onside kick.
Oh, okay.
I'd never heard of that. I didn't even know it was an option. And so you hear these stories about these players who said he knows everything.
Oh, yeah.
And in that, and I thought I knew everything, right? 11 years in the NFL, it's like, I've seen it all here.
Dick LeBeau has 59, 60.
And I'm like, I'd never seen that. And I just remember going, in that moment, I gained this just massive amount of respect where there was all this chaos going on the side. I mean, guys screaming. I was screaming and yelling.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, and he goes, we're going to onside it. Right. And it's like, oh, you can do that? That's a brilliant idea. Yeah. You know, and so he had this amazing ability to just have this calm in all of this chaos like nobody else could ever have.
Yeah, didn't get frazzled, he didn't melt down. You know, in the article it talks about, you know, some of his greatest memories, and he talked about the six Super Bowls that he's coached. And you know, I was fortunate to be in one of them with him. And, gosh, I just remember, you know, and 4 years with him and all of our defensive meetings and him as defensive coordinator and on the sideline under the most strenuous circumstances, right? And LeBeau always kept his cool. Always kept his cool. And he had great – people don't realize how great the defenses were under LeBeau. I mean, when we were – what, the San Francisco were up 3-0 at halftime, you know, against right. Joe Montana. I mean, right. our defense was just killing it.
And it's so odd because I'm just telling you, most defensive coaches are high energy.
Very,
high octane. You know, you've got to come with attitude and effort, and you just got to bring it, you know, and they're just these, you know, they're just the Energizer Bunny wired guys. Yeah. And he's totally the opposite of that. He's yep. more like an offensive coordinator type of guy.
Yeah.
And he's very cerebral and very much thinks things through. And then on top of all of it, he was a DB.
Yeah.
Right? They're
yeah.
not known to be like the tough guys.
Yeah.
Right?
But he's the DB from the 50s and
yeah,
60s,
it's like,
man.
You know, and it's just, and he's really this Renaissance man. And
oh, he is. And a gentleman, and he's got that, you know, he's got that James Bond. If you know him, I mean, he's got that little bit of that James Bond suave, oh, you know.
Totally.
Right?
I totally.
Mean, he's just a very handsome guy and debonair and. Then, like the stories they talk about, the great storyteller of the NFL, that is so true. We'd get a story every day out of LeBeau in a meeting.
So the interesting thing that happened with my Cincinnati situation, he brought us back in a situation that no one would want to be in.
Yeah.
And the interim coach went away, and he was named the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals. And I want to believe, and I'd love to ask him this question, I want to believe that might have been his greatest satisfaction in his whole entire coaching career, because that was an awful situation. It was awful. It was so bad. All right.
Been there. I've been in Cincinnati during awful situations.
Yeah, you know what awful is in Cincinnati.
In Cincinnati. There's some tough situations down at Spinney Field. But, you know, to have Dick LeBeau be the head coach, dude, I just – even in a bad situation, it gives me a feeling of relief, because Dick was not that – you know, call you out, demean you, tear you down guy in a bad situation, right? He'd just stay level. He'd come in, teach football, take care of business. What a great experience to be able to be a part of Dick LeBeau's life.
So we're going to take a break. But when we come back, I have a Dick LeBeau story that I am still mad at him about.
Really?
He talked me into something he was so good at.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Oh, he can talk you into anything, no doubt.
All right, Rivals got to take a break. We'll be back.
I'm excited to hear that one.
Welcome back to Rivals, talking Memory Lane with Coach Dick LeBeau. Kind of an interesting thing in our careers. Jason and I actually were coached, not at the same time. So we got different versions of Dick LeBeau, but both of us were coached by him
yeah.
and coached in Cincinnati.
Yeah. Small world, man.
It's kind of a weird thing, don't you think, that he's now the Tennessee Titans defensive coordinator. I see the pictures of him in those colors. It just doesn't seem right.
It doesn't seem right. True on that, and it's odd to me. But he's assistant head coach, too, I believe,
yeah.
right? And, you know, how do you replace the leadership?
Well, he's vice president of the United States as well. I mean, the guy has all, you know.
Well, he should be.
He can do anything.
LeBeau's such a stud. But I can just see the leadership. I would make him my assistant head coach in a heartbeat, just from what he would bring to the table, right? That wisdom.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be foolish not to. I mean, he really has. So he was at Pittsburgh. I actually played against him in Detroit when he was at Pittsburgh. I got to experience the zone blitz, you know, yeah. firsthand, and it was a problem. It caused you to have to rethink your whole offensive scheme in order to handle it.
Yeah,
because it puts you in a really bad position protection wise. There is a way to beat it.
Oh yeah,
there's a couple
yeah.
of ways.
There's
to beat
always
it.
Yeah,
but it took time for people to figure out how to beat the zone blitz, because it's a problem.
It's a problem, and you know what? It just takes, and you're just looking for that. You're not going to burn people every time, but you're going to create mental mistakes with the zone blitz, right? And people are going to miss their protections, and you know, all of a sudden a guy comes through, no touch, and murders the quarterback,
or a defensive lineman pops off of the line and out into coverage.
Yeah.
And you go, where did you come from? You know, it's hard. It's one thing to see a linebacker. It's near impossible to detect a defensive lineman that starts on the line of scrimmage down in a four-point stance
yeah.
and goes backwards.
Yeah.
It's really hard to see that.
And then drops out. Yep. Yeah. I did that assignment many times. Yeah.
And that's a frustrating deal. So I played – he was at Pittsburgh, and then he was at Cincinnati, and then he went back to Pittsburgh. That's where he got me. So I had played that year in Cincinnati. I had a one-year contract, played really good. We ended up winning, I think, four or five of our last six games. He becomes the head coach. And I was an integral part of him becoming that head coach. And the guys in Pittsburgh who had been in Detroit, the personnel guys, were now in Pittsburgh. They had been in Detroit, which is where I come from. They wanted to sign me. And I was going to go to Pittsburgh, and they said, look, I'm going to sign you to a two-year deal. Cordell Stewart's our starter right now. He's earned that position. We're not convinced that that's going to be a long-term thing. We know that you can step in, help us win.
You're a veteran.
We know all about you. So I'm like, I'm going to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And I get a phone call from Dick LeBeau on the day of the draft. And he goes, what are you going to do? He goes, I want you to come back here. And I go,
I wish I was advising you back then.
Here's the thing. I would love to come back because I started to build a rapport with these guys.
Yeah, your teammates, and you love Dick LeBeau.
They believe in me, and I have the most respect for you. I mean, I think the world of you. I go, but you guys signed John Kitna instead of me. So what does that tell you how you think about me?
Yeah.
And he said, look, I appreciate everything you did for me. You have no idea what that meant to me. But I will promise you that I will let you compete to be the starting quarterback. And if you're the star, and if you're the guy that's better, you'll play. So you can go to Pittsburgh, sit behind Cordell Stewart, kind of like what you did here, or you can compete to be the starter here. And I was like, and my agent was like, we're going to Pittsburgh, we're going to Pittsburgh.
Heck yeah.
And I was like, nope, I'm staying here.
Dude, I would have told you to go to Pittsburgh.
Why would you have told me to do that?
Because it's Cincinnati. You don't trust Mike Brown. I mean, I've been, I went through that down there. I mean, I love LeBeau, but he's not in charge. He says he's in charge, but he's not in charge.
So
Mike Brown's in charge.
So we,
right?
We go through the preseason. And you can look it up. The guys know me. They believe in me. John Kitten is a new guy.
Same thing happened to me, man.
I play really well.
Right.
Really well.
Right.
Okay? And I go into LeBeau's office, and he had this look of like just a defeated man, and he said, we're going to start John.
And it wasn't his decision, was it?
And then John left, and I talked to him, and I said, you promised me, and he said, what you just told me.
Yeah.
He goes, this is killing me. He goes, because I had no, they would not let me do it. He says, I fought for you. And he says, I wanted you to be my starter, but they said, we can't sign this guy and look bad.
Yeah.
And that's what the decision was all about.
I can't believe I'm bonding with a quarterback like this. I really can't, because you know what? My story is almost exactly the same damn story. My last year at the Bengals in camp, I go in, I lead the team in sacks through camp. I'm second on the team in tackles in the camp as a D lineman, which, you rarely do that as a D lineman.
Right.
And I just kill it in camp. And I even missed one game with the AC separation on my shoulder. And they take me out the last week, and I knew I was getting cut. You could smell it a mile away. It didn't matter what the heck I did. And I go to LeBeau one night, and I talk to him, and my wife was in town. Roxy was in town. And I go find him at his office. It's like at 9 at night. And LeBeau had been, had a couple drinks or whatever, and he was feeling good at the time when I was talking to him. And And I told him, I said, well, Dick, I said, I love you and I love playing for you, but I know I'm gone. And he goes, no, he goes, you know what? You got one guy really bat, you know, going to bat for you, and that's an important guy because I believe in you. I said, well, Dick, I appreciate it, but man, I can smell this a mile away. And, you know, sure enough, I get, you know, cut, and they screw me in the process and how they could do it and lied to me and all that. And LeBeau had no part of that. But I just know, and the news media is talking about, hey, they just cut the best D lineman on the team. And, you know, you're just like, what are you doing? And but it was Mike Brown and Sam Weish in the end making the decision, not LeBeau. But, I mean, it's really close to what you're doing. You outperform everybody. You see it, whether it's on the, you know, speed and the charts and in every way you outperform statistically and everything.
Yeah.
And yet you're gone.
They had players go up to him and tell him, we want Scott
to
start. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Dude, in two years, three at the most, that Super Bowl 23 team was totally disintegrated. I mean, I'm talking the very next season, they started getting rid of Super Bowl 23 players. And we should have been in the playoffs and fighting for Super Bowl for five straight years.
So all year long, Mike Brown, man. So all year long, Coach LeBeau says, just keep working hard.
Yeah.
Keep working hard. And they finally were going to let me play. He said he talked them into letting me play, and we're in practice, and I got injured in practice.
What?
Yes.
How did you get hurt in practice? Nobody's allowed to touch you.
Yeah, I had this thing, and it started in Detroit, and I tore this muscle off of my
It wasn't from a hit.
No, it was from throwing a football.
Just throwing football. Yeah. Just something tore on you.
Just tore. It was awful, terrible.
On your ribs, right?
But I could tell is that he wanted to live up to his word.
Oh, yeah. Dude, LeBeau was completely honorable, and I love Dick LeBeau. I'd go to war for him.
He talked me out of a better decision.
He totally did.
He did, and he was good at it.
Because, man, I went through what you were going through, literally exactly.
Had I known that, things would have been different. But it was just one of those interesting times. But here's the irony of the whole situation, and there's two parts to it. One from me and one from him. So I didn't go to Pittsburgh. And Tommy Maddox, who was a UCLA first round draft choice of the Denver Broncos, probably the early 90s, like 91, 92,
yeah,
been out of football. They signed him instead of me. He ends up being the comeback player of the year.
What?
Because Cordell Stewart gets out, and so it's just like, you know.
And it should have been you.
It should have been me. But then here's the other irony of it, is LeBeau goes back to Pittsburgh from Cincinnati.
Yeah, and then wins the Super Bowl. I mean, I was so happy for him at that time. I mean, gosh, I love LeBeau. One thing we got to talk about before we say goodbye on the LeBeau story is, because we both experienced it, and they talk about it in the article, and that was his annual...
It was the night before Christmas.
Yeah. That he would get up and do in front of the team.
And you have to, you know, if you have one thing in your life you get to experience, you have to hear him share that story, because it's very powerful how he does it.
It was.
It's written memory, you know, so he recites the whole thing. But it's the passion, it's the energy.
And you got to hear Dick LeBeau's accent.
No,
you
know,
he's just, you got to hear Dick LeBeau talk, because when you hear that, it stays with you forever. He's got that Southern charm, you know, accent that's never left him. And it was a great experience, because I got to hear a lot of really neat stories from Dick LeBeau over the years. I love the man. And you know what? Like I said, today he's still coaching at 80, whatever, and still answers our phone calls.
Yeah, and those are the great things about playing in the NFL. It's the people that you meet along the way.
Those great relationships,
truly,
right?
One of the classic guys in the world, and it's kind of fun that both Jason and I got a chance.
Love you, Dick LeBeau.
Yep. Well, Rivals has arrived, and now it's time to go, and we'll see you later. And we're glad that we had the opportunity to salute one of the all-time great NFL personas.
Absolutely, man. What a great experience in our lives.
Text Rivals to 65537. Go to all those social sites and like us. Catch you later.